ladies, and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 in Chicago. Oh my goodness, with the post end of an incredible Shabbos and weekend that we had, Project 613 had our second downtown Shabbos in the city, Shabbaton for our incredible Project 613 participants. It was absolutely incredible with incredible people, food, crowd, ambiance, energy. Jews in downtown Chicago connecting, really, truly, truly special. So it verifies our investment in this downtown center is the right move for our organization and able to reach so many more Jewish young professionals in downtown Chicago. So it was a really incredible weekend. Exhausted, but the show goes on. Okay, and yes, a lot of exciting things happening year end. Of course, we are starting our next round of our mentorship program cohort with Olami starting in January. If you know young professionals in Chicagoland area who would like to connect Jewishly, but also with a professional, personal, spiritual mentor, someone from the community, it's one of the outstanding programs that we run along with Olami, and super excited to begin the next cohort in January. Okay, and there's news in the sports world. Ohtani. Now, I'm sure I'm not the first one to come up with that Ohtani, but boy, oh boy, $700 million. $700 million. Now, I know you're going to say that really, adjusted for inflation, and it's going against the cap of the $465 or $464 million, and all the arithmetic of it and the calculus of it. Okay, and we're going to get into the deferred money aspect of it. One of the unique features of the contract is that it is deferred. Fact, so $70 million for 10 years is $700 million. However, he's only going to be accepting $2 million a year. And then at the end of those 10 years, we'll be accepting the rest of the $68 million. Okay, we're going to get to that in a second and why he did that. But the first point that we need to talk about is money. We've mentioned this years ago. But if you would like to find out who you are and what your values are, there is a very easy exercise in which to do that. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily to go to a psychologist. It doesn't necessarily mean even, well, if you go to a rabbi, that's always instructful. You have to go to the right rabbi. Okay, but if you want to know what your values are and what you stand for, there is one cold-hearted, brutal analysis of what your values are and who you are. And that is your credit card statement at the end of the month. And if you don't use your credit card statement, the bank statement, however you pay for things. And if you would look through there, you will see what your values are. Now, I always love when the ComEd and People's Gas, you know, the different electric companies and gas companies send us our, you're way more than your neighbors. Well, with eight children, of course, we're, you know, but like, here's the average family, here's what your neighbors are, and here's where you are, right? You use much more electricity, you use much more gas. Well, correct, because we have more children, right? Our grocery bills are much higher than any of our young professionals or anyone, right? That we, well, not everyone we know people with larger families. But obviously, our grocery bill is going to be quite large. Why? Because that's where we want our money going. We value a large family. We value wonderful, beautiful Jewish children, Then the next thing, Jewish day school education. Tons of money going towards that. Why? Because that's where our values are. We put our money where our values are. And therefore, you can go through and that you'll have people who will complain about a day school education and drop dozens of thousands of dollars on week-long vacations or two-week-long vacations, which is tuition for a year for at least could be several of their children. So the question is what amount of matter of priorities, the matter of what earns your dollar. Your dollar is your greatest indicator of your values, of our values. And so therefore, it is just an just mind-boggling concept that our culture has got to the place. And I, as you know, am a huge sports fan, has got to the place where we will pay someone $70 million a year to play baseball. Okay, I know you're saying he's a two-way player and it's really $35 million a year for each of the positions he would have gotten. Okay, you can do all the calculations and we will talk about that. But ultimately, our society values someone who can throw and hit a white ball so well that we are going to make him literally the highest paid employee ever. I mean, obviously, CEOs of the company, I guess he's technically an employee, could make more than that, and oftentimes do make more than that. But a baseball player, an athlete, $70 million a year, $700 million, I think is absolutely staggering and an indicator of the values of the culture. And again, not knocking sports. I love sports. But I do think it might have gotten a drop too far without us realizing how much we are investing in these pursuits. Okay, that said. But Dodgers weren't listening to me. It's okay. Several other teams are willing to pay the same amount of money. Even my own former San Francisco Giants as well. But they were. They just did not win the top prize. Okay, so now let's get to another key aspect of Ohtani's contract. The deferred money. He's getting $2 million a year paid. Now, do not lose any sleep over Ohtani being poor, because he is going to make much more money a year. Now they say up to $50 million on endorsements alone. So even on the endorsements, he'd be the highest paid Major League Baseball player aside from his other pursuits. But what he said was ostensibly, and it seems consistent with his approach in the negotiating with other teams, is that he wants to win. He wants to win a World Series. That's really what he wants to do. And by him taking less money, he is actually the 17th ranked player in actual money that's being distributed this year, even though the Dodgers need to put some money in escrow to make sure, okay, et cetera, that, you know, it's not going to just whop down on them 10 years from now. But nevertheless, he's going to be the 17th player level of salary this year. Why? Because he wants the Dodgers to be able to invest money in a supporting cast of players that, unfortunately, the Los Angeles Angels were not able to do. Okay. And people, quite understandably, are praising Shohei Ohtani for his self-sacrifice, for his willingness to go on a paltry $2 million. I'll take that. I'll go on a $2 million. Yeah, Project 62 doesn't pay that way. But I'm sure a lot of us would want to be self-sacrificing and go on a $2 million salary a year. However, after California taxes, it ends up about 4 cents a year. Okay, but I digress. Again, my old state. I love my old state. I'm not sure I love my old state. It's where I grew up. But anyway, the point being, there is a point where Ohtani is, many people saying he's mathematically savvy and he's economically savvy. Okay, whatever it is. But the bottom line is he is not taking money up front because he wants to win. He is sacrificing for the larger good. And people are praising for that. And, you know, it could be that there's a grain of truth. And when I heard that, I now want to share with you an absolutely incredible story. The incredible story of a man and his wife and their family. And the obviously the death toll in Gaza of our Israeli soldiers, of our Jewish men, boys who are fighting for goodness in this world, who are fighting for morality in this world, who are fighting to wipe evil off the face of the earth in this world. And we're paying a supreme price for this. Well over 100 soldiers now have been killed. And one of the soldiers that was killed last week was Alicia Lowenstern. Alicia Lowenstern is the cousin of our beloved Sharon Goldrich, who has been a very close family friend for more than a decade, and related the Lowensterns to the Goldrich family, of which were Judd and Tiffany, our students as well, and others of the Goldriches. And so we feel a special closeness to this Alicia Lowenstern. And he was killed in battle in Gaza last week, not even a week ago. As the details come out, you'll see it's a very painful story, but it's an incredibly uplifting story as well. So Alicia was 38 years old. He, his family was from New York. They made Aliyah, very idealistic. They moved to Israel, and he went to yeshiva, served in the army, became a successful computer programmer, and at 38 was exempt from Miluim. Miluim is the Israeli Army Reserves. And in addition, he had 6 children, which is, again, the Israeli Army does not obligate anyone with 6 children to come back for the reserves. But when the war broke out, Alicia and his wife discussed, at least his wife Hadas, discussed what they should do. And for both of them, there was no question. Alicia wanted to, and his wife encouraged him to go back with his unit to fight for the Jewish people in Gaza. Sadly, unfortunately, even though Alicia, in the first part of the war, helped save many lives and work for the good of the Jewish people, unfortunately, his tank was struck, and his tank was struck, and unfortunately, he was killed. May his memory be for a blessing. Now, can you imagine this? He's 38 years old. He's exempt from army service. And he and his wife both willingly wanted him to go and serve in the army? Are you crazy? Is that unbelievable? And Hadas was literally interviewed. Again, this is all the last few days. She was interviewed in the car while she's driving with her 6 children to go to the army camp to identify the body, to positively identify that it was really her husband who was killed. And this interview is happening on Israeli radio, live, with her children in the background of the car, like regular children. And I want to share with you some of the transcript of this most incredible interview. Okay, you can actually find this on LinkedIn. I don't know who this woman is, but Gila Bublik, B-U-B-L-I-C-K, G-I-L-A, Gila Bublik. Seems that she works for J.P. Morgan. Okay, and she was friends with Hadas. And I actually got the recording of this in Hebrew, but that may not help many of you, so I will do it, translate. Okay, just kidding. I'll do it in English, okay? And I'll pick around. So basically, the interviewers are treading very softly. Why? Obviously, because this woman just lost her husband. And she greets them, condolences, and then she greets Hanukkah Sameach, Erev Tov, Happy Hanukkah, have a good evening. And they said, we're so sorry. She says, thank you. She says, please, the host says, we hug your family, your children. and they begin the interview. So when did you speak with Alicia the last time? And she said she spoke with him Saturday night. Not this past Saturday night, the Saturday night before. And he was happy. He was in high spirits. We're fighting like lions. And she said, I thanked him and I blessed him. And I told him that he should do whatever is needed because we're strong here in the home front and that he has a lot of merit in doing what he's doing, fulfilling his duty. And the hosts are getting the sense that this woman is like a woman of tremendous strength, and they hear the children in the background. And at that point, she says, yes, we're going to identify him at the base. I mean, this is just like beyond belief, the poise of this woman. And she explains, really, he wasn't supposed to be in Miluim. He didn't need to go. The host is saying this. And they ask, why did he go? And Hadas responds, well, it was logical decision. If there's an opportunity to advance the Jewish nation in its land, like, why not go? Like, obvious. It's Pashut to say in Hebrew, it's obvious. He says, my husband wasn't born here. They could have stayed in New York, but they didn't. They came and they decided to move here and tie their fate to the fate of our beautiful country. And from our point of view, that's the natural choice. And the commentators now start, oh my gosh, we thought we were here to comfort you, but now you're strengthening us. And that's the tone of the rest of this absolutely incredible interview. And I'll continue. So she says that, you know, she really wishes that the mourning notices when they say that we're in pain, we're tzar gadol, we're in awful pain from the passing. She says, you know what? No, they should write, we're with tremendous pride. With tremendous pride on the passing because they lived a life. And the host is like, unbelievable. It's like, well, how could you say that? Like, what do you mean? And she says, my husband did what our grandparents and our great grandparents could only have dreamed of to defend ourselves and our own army with our own country with national pride. It's something that we've dreamed about for over 2,000 years. And they lit the Hanukkah menorahs in their homes in fear in Poland and wherever they were and sang about the miracles of old. But listen to what she says. But we and our generation, our entire life is a song of miracles. It's just unbelievable. Like that she sees and she connects the purpose for which they were fighting the army. And she says, and this connects to what you said, that he wasn't obligated to go, but he wanted to. We both wanted him to go, both of us together. So the interview continues, and the host want to know, like, where do you get your strength from? How can you have this positive attitude? And she says, she quotes her teacher, Rav Druckman, who was a big rabbi in Israel, died a year ago, and he was a Nitzel Shoah. He survived the Holocaust. And he said that he was able to appreciate the miracles of the modern day Israel because he was born in Europe and survived the Holocaust. But he said he felt that people today did not, who grew up in Israel, just took it for granted. And they don't realize how miraculous the modern existence of the Jewish people coming back to their homeland in 2,000 years is. And Hadas continues. She says, there's a human tendency to focus on the difficulties, but we are a superhuman people. There is no other people that survived thousands of years that came back to their land and reestablished there. We're superhuman. And that also gives strength that I understand that we're part of a chain. Of course, there's also pain. I have lost the man that loved me the way no other person in the world could have loved me. And at this point in the interview, she does start to cry a little bit. And then she continues, and she said, we were blessed with 6 children. We were going to celebrate our anniversary in 2 weeks. The personal pain is very big, but the national story gives strength. It gives strength. People, this woman just lost her husband, and she's obviously in tremendous personal pain, But because she's connected to the larger story of the Jewish people, this woman's going to make it. And she's going to raise 6 unbelievable, incredible children. And God willing, at the right time, may she remarry. But do you see the strength, the mesiras nefesh, the self-sacrifice for the greatness of the good? And so when I saw Otani and people praising him for his tremendous self-sacrifice, and I have no beef against Otani. Really, I don't. I don't. I'm not complaining against him. More power to him that he earned what he did, and he earned it fair and square, and good for him. But the secular notion of sacrifice for a larger ideal is that versus the Jewish people? This woman who is speaking in all the glory of all the prophets of Jewish history, speaking out how, what does it mean to be part of the Jewish people today? And even if you're not in Israel today, what are we doing? Who are we? What are we giving to the Jewish people? What are we investing? Are we becoming more knowledgeable Jews? You know, I had a couple of families from West Rogers Park. I'd give the shout out. The Shkup family, the Kune family. Past month, the Cohen family came down. Others have come down to be with us downtown. It's not convenient to be downtown for Shabbos outside of the community. It's just one small example of people stepping up and doing something great. What are you doing? What are we doing? What are we sacrificing for? If Otani can sacrifice his $68 million a year, what are we sacrificing for the Jewish people? May we take Hadas Lowenstern as a model, a role model, and her husband Elisha of blessed memory as role models for truly how to sacrifice for the larger good of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, for the land of Israel, and ultimately for Hashem, for God Almighty. Have a great week, and God willing, we'll see you right back here again next week for an exciting edition of Monday Motivation.